the archives of Radio Curious, I'm Barry Vogel. Most countries in the world send ambassadors to talk about and promote what their country is like, as well as to carry on political affairs between and among other nations. These ambassadors also have assistants known as cultural attachés. These cultural attachés bring and share their nation's culture, history, and folklore with the host countries. The cultural event known as Halloween in the United States is celebrated annually on November 1st as the Day of the Dead in Mexico and other Latin American countries. In 1997, Radio Curious invited Gregorio Luque, the cultural attaché from the Republic of Mexico, based in Los Angeles, California, to visit our studios when he was the consul for cultural affairs. His job at the time was to broaden the Mexican cultural presence in the United States. Our conversation began when I asked Gregorio Luque to describe the cultural gaps he sought to bridge in presenting Mexican culture and to tell us about the Day of the Dead.
I believe that Mexico historically has one of the richest and most powerful cultures in the world. It's a tradition that comes from more than 3,000 years. And this tradition is known only partially. We know a little bit about ancient Mexico and the pyramids and some of the 20th century art, but there's a lot of gaps in this. And there's also the need to make it accessible to a broader audience. I truly believe that the best way that you can understand a culture is by studying its art, by studying its literature, its paintings. Many times you can learn more about a people through their art than if you were to read statistics or the current affairs. Because the culture reveals not just what the people, the way people see themselves, but also the continuity of that feeling throughout the years. And this is why it's so important, it's so useful.
Oftentimes, though, it is the artist that is persecuted by repressive political governments. They try and explain something or express a new idea. We have the horrible history of what happened in Chile in 1973.
Yeah, and it is the artist, the conscience of a nation. And this is why when we look at, for example, in the case of Chile, if you read Neruda, or you would later read Isabel Allende's version of those horrible days, it gives you a sense of what that people were feeling at the moment. But not only does it communicate the travails, but also the joys, the hopes, the dreams of a people. The fantasy of that country, the way it sees itself. And it gives you something that is even more important that cannot be necessarily rendered in words, which is a sensitivity. You can learn more about the African-American experience by listening to some blues or some spirituals than if I were to read a lengthy description of what was happening. Why? Because sometimes it's not enough to know what has happened. What is also important is to be able to feel what others have felt. And this is the possibility of establishing empathy with another human being in another circumstance. And this is the bridge that can be built through art, and this is why I believe it's so important.
What was the reason that you were moved from Washington, D.C. to Los Angeles. There's an enormous Mexican community in Los Angeles, and of course California has a very strong Mexican influence in the state's history, some good and some bad. Was there a reason why your government wanted you to come to California?
Well, I believe that there isn't no city in the world that has a largest, not only of Mexican, but of Spanish-speaking people after Mexico City than Los Angeles. And so the purpose has, I believe, a double function. For all of those that are of Mexican origin, no, especially from the young, from the children, it is important for them to know the culture that they come from, to be able to feel pride in this culture. And for those that are not of Mexican descent, precisely because there is such a large community, it is important to understand more and know more about it, and to find what we can learn from each other. And how can we prosper together? It has been said that the Mexico and the U.S. have been neighbors, are neighbors, and will be neighbors forever. And so it is very important to make this neighborhood, this togetherness, a source of strength and not a source of division. And so culture can help that. It certainly can't solve all the problems, but it can permit a greater understanding of the other. And so I think that it is a very important job to do this, and that has been building. You must remember the beautiful exhibit, 30 Centuries of Splendor, but always it was like a big exhibit and then nothing, and then another. So the idea is to try to give it continuity and to make it a more permanent cultural promotion.
Mexico is a country with multiple races and many different racial origins, and California is becoming the same thing. You can bridge gaps by bringing a synthesis or creating a new synthesis of sharing cultures with the different racial groups. But how do you do that? And at the same time, when a new synthesis is created, maintain the cultural identity of the many different races and the many different cultural groups?
Well, I think that the Mexican experience can be useful in this country because, no, you lose that individual identity.
In the Mexican experience?
Yes, I believe that you form a new identity.
In other words, the many different Native American or Indian groups have blended more into a Mexican culture?
In Mexico, what happened in Mexico is that you have, of course, a very strong Indian civilizations. And then you have the arrival of the European Spanish cultures, and also you have a strong African-American influences. And all of these very strong cultures blend and form a new identity and a new culture that is enriched by all of them, but it is also different from them. The strength of a person like Frida Kahlo is precisely that she represents the coming together of different cultures. And this is evident in everything in Mexico.
Who is Frida Kahlo?
Frida Kahlo is, well, one of Mexico's greatest artists. She's probably the most famous women artist of Mexico. And increasingly she's being very much admired abroad. And particularly in the United States, I would say.
If you were to sum up the contributions that she has made as an artist, what would you say?
I would say that she is a multicultural Mexican artist. She's somebody that was able to bring the different racial and cultural and religious aspects that exist in Mexico and to fuse them to express herself using all of these elements to create a work in which people can recognize each other, many different people can recognize each other.
She had a very difficult life, many painful surgeries, difficult for her to get around.
Frida Kahlo, through her whole life, it was like a battle against adversity. When she's only 7 years old, she develops polio. And later she has this, as a teenager, she recovers from polio. She's able to walk again. And then she has this horrific accident in which she breaks her pelvis, her spine, her leg, all this kind of. And as a consequence of this accident, she has constantly surgical interventions. She's unable to have children. But the important thing is not the fact that she suffered, but that she was able to not only, I would say, overcome this suffering, but sublimate it through her art. She was able to create paintings in which she expresses her pain, but at the same time continue creating and continuing moving forward. And at the same time bringing all of the different cultural legacies of Mexico together. So I think people respond to this in many levels, you know, from a personal point of view, but also from a cultural aspect.
I want to take a moment and say that my guest this week is Gregorio Luque, who is the Council for Cultural Affairs from the country of Mexico, from the Republic of Mexico. He's based in Los Angeles, and he's visiting in Ukiah to do a presentation on the Day of the Dead about Frida Kahlo. Gregorio, you have a particular personal interest in Vincent van Gogh, and I understand that he's been, in a way, a guiding light for your life and some of your personal thoughts. I'd like you to tell us about that.
I would recommend to all of you, all our friends that are listening, to buy the letters of Van Gogh. Don't go for the novels and the books. Go for the letters of Van Gogh.
What do these letters say?
Read a letter a day.
What do they speak to you?
It's Van Gogh's struggle to create, his visions of art, his visions of life. They are extraordinary. If you read a letter of Van Gogh a day, your life will be much fuller. It's one of the things that I've done always. I go to bed and I read a letter of Van Gogh. And believe me, you will see life differently. The way his much more than art. He speaks about life, about nature, about one's relationship with God, with love. It's one of those great testimonies of history. So I really would encourage you to buy the letters of Van Gogh and to read them. A modern Bible, I would say.
What is it about Van Gogh's experience that you feel has brought forth in words what he lived, what he saw?
His honesty. Every great artist has to be honest. Because the only way that a painting or a poem is going to move you, if it's true to you deeply. So Van Gogh is somebody that feels deeply, that is uncorruptible, that never does anything for a distorted pursuit. It's his clarity, his intensity, and something that I believe would be specially appealing for all of you that live in this land of so much beauty is his relationship with nature. Trying to discover what color is the wheat, how does the sun reflect on the mountain, becoming one with nature, and and not lying, and telling what he feels in the most clear and beautiful manner.
This is Van Gogh. Gregorio Luque has said, be afraid of self-censorship. Say the truth. Can you talk about that? Where this emanates in from you, from your experience? A man of letters, a man who represents his country, purveying and promoting culture?
Well, I believe that if you are to be a bridge, you have to be able to say the whole truth and at least what is true to you. And you have to be able to not hide a part of, for instance, if you're speaking of an artist, sometimes the difficult passages in that artist's life help you enjoy more the other lights. So as a communicator, you must present the whole vision. And by doing so, you make that artist into a real human being and a real person, and not an icon that is perfect and is distant and that is far away from people's everyday life. So then, you know, we must run away not only from self-censorship, but from elitism. Art should become a part of our lives. We should see artists and we should see art as a part of our day, as something that we can be a part of, and not as this icon that is worshipped and that has nothing to do with us.
When some people speak of art, they envision symphonies, orchestras, ballets, many things that are available only to people with money. When you speak of art, what do you mean?
I think that it is profoundly wrong that the tickets are inaccessible to people. I think that art should be accessible to everyone. And this is why museums are almost the last venue in which people can go and can see an exhibit. And the same must be true about symphony music. Why has the audiences for classical music shrink so dramatically? Well, because it's so expensive, because it's something that people can't do on a regular basis. And when you can't do on a regular basis, you stop having the continuity that is necessary for that art form to survive. So I think that we must do an effort to bring art to schools, to bring music, to bring good dance, and to open it to everybody. Then we can make it accessible to children, that we can make it accessible to citizens of every different group. If we don't do that, if we don't use art as a way of bringing us together, we run the risk of becoming increasingly separated, becoming increasingly violent. I think that art should be promoted more than ever, especially in the light of what we're doing. I think that a lot of this violence that we see, this experience of young men and women that feel nothing of killing another human being, are all symptoms of an artless society, a society where there isn't... See, art permits you. Why does art exist in the first place? Art is derived from the feeling of communion. When the primitive men and women dance together, or they paint together, or they paint the caves, they do it because they want to have power over nature. They want to use almost like a magical instrument. But the fantastic thing is that the magic works not necessarily in the outside, but in bringing them together. They do become more powerful. And so when you listen to a music composed 200 years ago, you can connect with that human being. And when you bring this connection of one human being with another, is the essence of civilization. If we lose art as a driving force in society, we become a prehistoric society. However, and that is, in my view, very dangerous.
You represent the Republic of Mexico, but is there someone in the Republic of Mexico who tells you, as the Council for Cultural Affairs, what you should do and how you should say what you should say, or is this your choice?
I've been able to. Mexico's culture is so vast and so rich that it's almost inexhaustible, and I have been able to promote those artists or those figures that are considered the most important of Mexico, not
by,
necessarily
by, whom?
By me.
By whom?
But by a society. By the through history, there are artists that, you know, that survive, authors whose books continue to be published and to be read, painters whose work is still. You know, even if they have died, their work, their exhibits continue to be known. And I have tried to begin precisely by those main figures of Mexican culture. Because what I'm interested is in trying to use these great artists, these people like Diego Rivera, like Sor Juana, like Frida Kahlo, as ways to build the bridge between Mexico and the U.S. And by no means does this mean that there are not many other artists that could be equally worthy, or there may be artists that are emerging today. But if there is like an interest in, say, Frida Kahlo or Diego Rivera, and then we're able to take advantage of that interest and broaden it and tell them more about Frida and bring them in, well then, this serves a double purpose of nourishing an interest that is here, and at the same time of speaking of that artist, and by speaking of that artist, speak of the culture in a broader sense. You speak of Frida Kahlo, for instance, and the challenge, in my view, is not only to speak about Frida Kahlo, but how does she connect with the Mexican experience? How does she incorporate popular art, the retablos, the milagros, the popular traditions, the pre-Hispanic traditions? And you present them all that, and so then maybe that was only interested in Frida Kahlo might be interested in retablos, might be want to go to a church, might want to see, I don't know, other forms of iconography.
In your country, you have a very unique job, and you bring it to our country. How does a person like yourself get the job that you have?
Well, you know, most of the time, you have people that are either established authors or that are, you know, very well-known artists. Or
people who are basically 20, 30 years older than you.
That have been recognized as such. And in my case, I was fortunate to have been given this opportunity earlier in my life, which I believe is also very important, because since I'm not a famous author myself, my interest is in promoting others and to bringing other artists and to share them with great enthusiasm and great love for this art, and to be able to connect with people. So I don't know. I don't think there is any written.
Do you have connections in the government of Mexico that allowed you to get the job that you have?
Well, in my experience, it has been the work itself No, that after, you know, a certain period of time, as in every job, you may have an opportunity, but then it is what do you do with that opportunity, and how does your work function, and how are you able to connect with the society, and how does that work have an impact in that society? And it is these repercussions that if your work is well done, if people are enjoying it, and they call and they write and there is demand for the work that you do, that you can continue in a position like this.
Well, Gregorio Luque, Counsel for Cultural Affairs from the Republic of Mexico, I want to thank you for joining us on Radio Curious. But before we close, I want to ask you the question I ask all of my guests, which in a sense you have already answered. And the question is, could you please tell us of an interesting book that you've read lately? Something other than Vincent van Gogh.
I recommend you reading the new book by Carlos Fuentes. It's called The Crystal Frontier. And it is a novel in 9 short stories about Mexico and the U.S. and about the double perspective of this sometimes difficult but also very enriching relationship. It's very interesting because it's not just a Mexican view. Carlos Fuentes is a man that has lived a long time in this country and knows it well. And so we can see both angles and different views, and we can see families. And I found it fascinating. I think that you will enjoy it very much.
Gregorio Luque, thank you very much for joining us on Radio Curious.
Thank you. I'm very pleased to be here.
Gregorio Luque was the cultural attaché from the Republic of Mexico based in Los Angeles, California in 1997. The book he recommends is The Crystal Frontier by Carlos Fuentes. Over 400 Radio Curious programs may be found on our website, radiocurious.org. They're free as my gift to you. I hope you enjoy them. Our address is 280 North Oak Street, Ukiah, UKIAH, California, 95482. The phone is 707-462-6541. And email is curious@radiocurious.org. Christina Onnestad is our assistant producer. I'm host and producer Barry Vogel. Thank you for listening.